From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good Wednesday afternoon. Thank you for joining us for Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here, sitting in for Tony today. Well, just on Monday, the Third Circuit affirmed a lower court ruling that the right of City of Philadelphia can continue to exist in their discrimination against a Catholic social services organization because of their decision not to place foster children with homosexual couples or couples who are unmarried. Republican Congressman Mike Kelly of Pennsylvania's 16th Congressional District joins me with his analysis. In my next segment, I am thrilled to welcome to the show Aaron Haviland, who is a third-year law school student and blew the whistle on Yale University's decision to yank student stipends from those who work at conservative Christian organizations like Alliance Defending Freedom. And even though he is prepping for his final exams right now, he agreed to chat with us, so we'll have him in the second block. At the bottom of the hour, the Louisiana House late yesterday passed a constitutional amendment confirming there is no right to abortion. I will talk to the lead sponsor, Democratic Representative Katrina Jackson, who bravely spoke at this year's annual March for Life in Washington, D.C. And in my final segment, I'll talk about why Bernie Sanders' Medicaid for All concept is a terrible idea. My guest will be Sally Pipes, president of the Pacific Research Institute and author of The False Promise of Single-Payer Healthcare. Welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks again for joining us today. This is Sarah Perry sitting in for Tony Perkins. Well, we've had some rather discouraging news from Pennsylvania this week. The Third Circuit ruled on Monday that Philadelphia officials can choose not to contract with a Catholic foster care agency that refuses to place children with homosexual or unmarried couples due to their sincerely held religious beliefs. Joining me now to talk about this development is Republican Congressman Mike Kelly, who represents the 16th District of Pennsylvania and serves as the ranking member on the Ways and Means Committee. Congressman Kelly, welcome back to Washington Watch.
We're still online, right?
Congressman, are you there? Well, after a local media outlet reported that Catholic social services would not place children with homosexual couples, Philadelphia refused to renew its contract with the foster care agency, despite the fact that no homosexual couples have ever approached a Catholic social services organization to become foster parents, which we think is fairly ridiculous. And I would suspect our next guest does too. Congressman Kelly, welcome back to Washington Watch. Well, there are about 6,000 foster care children in Philadelphia, and when the case began in the lower court, the city had contracts with 30 foster care agencies, including Catholic Social Services, the one at issue in this case here, and recently ruled against by the Third Circuit in Philadelphia. The lead plaintiff was Sharon L. Fulton. She is a single mother licensed through Catholic Social Services and says she has fostered more than 40 children over the course of 26 years. Representative Kelly, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
So it appears in this case here, the city of Philadelphia is cutting off their nose to spite their face. We have in the plaintiff this case an individual who is a single mother, licensed through Catholic Social Services, who's been fostering more than 40 kids over the course of 26 years. And the city of Philadelphia decided not to renew the contract with Catholic Social Services, which means they can place fewer children with loving, stable homes. Were you surprised by the Third Circuit's ruling in this case?
You know, I was hopeful that they'd come to their senses, you know, especially, and I know you covered it in the beginning here, there's never been a case that somebody was turned away. There was no, it actually hadn't happened. This is kind of a preemptive strike by the city of Philadelphia. Quite frankly, it's worse when you look at the fact that what we're turning our back on are children that need to be in adoptive care or in foster care, and we're turning back on the originators of foster care and adoptive care, and that's the faith-based community. So you got to sit back and scratch your head. So when did this become an issue, and when was this ever an issue, and why all of a sudden is it an issue? And the answer is Philadelphia went out looking for something to try and make an issue out of this when it was no issue. There's 30 different foster care foster agencies available, including the Catholic Social Services. So they don't have a problem with agencies. They just have a problem with Catholic Social Services saying because of their deeply held beliefs that they do not place children in same-sex marriages, that they can't participate anymore. So all of a sudden, the emphasis or the attention turned away from children who need loving homes to an issue which looks to me that there must be a tremendous fear out there or some type of an attitude. Somehow you're being discriminated against, so you go around the country hunting for problems that you can look up that don't exist. Listen, this to me is absolutely absurd. And I think the people of Philadelphia, we elect people to make decisions for us and act in our best interest. If somebody can explain to me how this is in the best interest of children who need to be in foster care or adoptive care, be in with a loving family, how this works in their best interest, I'd sure like to hear it.
And the Circuit Court Judge Thomas Elbrow, who wrote for the unanimous three-judge panel, said that the city stands on firm ground in requiring its contractors to abide by its non-discrimination policies when administering public services, and the record does not show religious persecution or bias, but shows instead the city's good faith in its efforts to enforce the laws against discrimination. So what this appears to be, and I would suspect you might agree with this, is a notion of weighing one interest against the other and in the end deciding that the city's interest in not contracting with religious organizations outweighs that of the organization's right to practice its belief in the first place.
Yeah, you know what, Sarah, so think about what you just said and to our listeners. So the case has always been that we have children that need to be placed in loving homes. The question now has become, or the issue now has become, is that somehow there could be discrimination. It hasn't taken place yet, by the way, now, because nobody's ever gone to Catholic Social Service in a same-sex marriage to adopt a child. They know there's, in a city that has 30 foster care agencies, they know there's other places they can go if that's what they choose to do. This is turning your back on children. This is, has nothing to do with an issue that, quite frankly, that I look at, and I think a lot of people look at it. So are we going out trying to find an issue that doesn't exist? Are we trying to find discrimination and try to somehow make that the issue rather than placing children in the right home for the right reasons for with the right parents? I don't get it. I, quite frankly, this is so goes so against the grain of what the purpose of adoptive care and foster care is all about, and that is placing children in a loving home. And, you know, we are deeply held religious beliefs. Why in the world do they have to abandon those beliefs because the city of Philadelphia and a three-judge panel thinks that's in the best interest of children? They're not making a ruling on what's the best interest of children. They're coming up with some kind of an argument that somehow this could possibly be discriminatory, or it is discriminatory, and for that reason Philadelphia can deny funding to Catholic Social Services. I think it's appalling.
Well, you have a very interesting both national and local level. Being from Pennsylvania yourself, are you surprised by the fact that the mayor, Jim Kenney, who affirmed the decision legitimizing this particular type of discrimination, was so overtly supportive of both the district court's decision and the Third Circuit's decision? He came out with a very strong statement saying that he was extremely pleased and this was the appropriate outcome based on what the Philadelphia ordinance required, which was the prohibition of sexual orientation discrimination in public accommodations. Did that surprise you as someone who is from Pennsylvania themselves?
You know, not from the part of Pennsylvania I'm from, but again, I don't know the mayor at all, never met him personally. I did see a clip one time when there was another ruling when it came to Sanctuary City. So I always just say to people, you know, you should never be surprised if you look into somebody's background, because usually somebody's past behavior is an indication of what their future performance will be. This, to me, is a case where this mayor has decided to make this an issue and one that somehow sets him apart or makes him look like something different than maybe he thought he was. You know, quite frankly, at this point in my life, I'm pretty secure in who I am and who raised me and the people who schooled me, coached me. So I don't have those insecurities, and I don't think I have to go out doing special dances when I think something to the far left serves for some type of a platform to me to dance on. But again, I don't know the mayor. I do know that in this case, and in other cases, he and I probably are in polar opposite ends of the spectrum.
Well, we know that these cases are popping up like individual whack-a-moles across the country, and little by little we're seeing now an incremental governmental creep into the whole notion of deeply held religious beliefs wherever those are practiced, and we see a pervasive, consistent theme from the hard left in that we ought to maintain our religious beliefs within the context of our homes and our church walls, and we are not allowed to exercise them at any other prospect. But I'm very encouraged, as I know our listeners are, about the reintroduction of the Inclusion Act, which you just announced in January of this year. Can you tell us about that legislation?
Well, I mean, the legislation goes back, and we started on this years and years ago, and the fact that, and again, this is the part that I think people need to look at, and I kind of laugh at it because people say, well, you're being discriminatory. I said, you know, what this is called is the Inclusion Act, not the Exclusion Act. There's nothing in that legislation that excludes any adoptive or foster care agency that wants to participate. What it is saying is don't exclude the faith-based community because of long-held religious beliefs, deeply held religious beliefs. And I go back to history. Please look at where foster care and adoptive care started. And if you can turn your back on the history of the faith-based community and working in the best interest of children, then I want to hear that. I want to hear that explanation. So if you're out there looking for something to be wrong, if you're looking for that thread to pull on so the whole shoulder will fall off the sweater, you can find those things. But at the end of the day, this is not about any other community other than the fact that it's a faith-based community. It was the originators of adoptive and foster care. You're really going to exclude that group of people because they believe in deeply held religious beliefs that these children should not be in same-sex marriages. There's nothing in that legislation that excludes anybody else that's in there, but it does ask, please include and always include the faith-based communities. You know what, though, Sarah? What the country is looking at now is the results of elections of people who don't clearly identify themselves early on. The American people determine who the policymakers will be, who the legislators will be, who will be representing them. And I don't care if it's the mayor of Philadelphia or you sit in city council or if you're a state rep, state senator, township commissioner. Every one of those positions is an elected position. Please, voters, look at who you're voting for.
Representative Mike Kelly from Pennsylvania's 16th has been my great guest, a friend to us, a friend to his constituents. We will be watching for the Inclusion Act. Coming up next, the Yale Law School whistleblower and the decision to yank stipends from those who are conservatives. You're listening to Washington Watch. We'll be right back.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Happy birthday to you. In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. This is Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at FRC Action. I am sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Well, I'm quite pleased to be able to talk to my next guest. Not only is he intelligent, he is currently cramming for final exams. In law school, nonetheless, a feeling I know oh so well, and it is not a comfortable one, but he has taken time out of his very busy schedule to talk to us about a Yale Law School policy that has sparked a heated controversy. Some are condemning the rule as discriminating against Christian groups, while others praise it for being supportive of the school's gay and transgender students. The school will give financial support only for public interest fellowships with employers that do not discriminate based on gender or sexual orientation in hiring. And school administrators, after recently announcing this new policy this year, some individuals were up in arms, including my next guest, Aaron Haviland, third-year Yale Law School student who blew the whistle and particularly wrote a piece for The Federalist on April 1st talking about the consequences of this particular policy. Welcome so much to Washington Watch, Aaron.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be talking to you today.
So let's talk a little bit about how this whole kerfuffle began. The Law School Federalist Society invited a lawyer from the Alliance Defending Freedom, who, by the way, is, as you know, 9-0 at the Supreme Court. They are not exactly a mom-and-pop pizza lawyer shop. These guys are legit attorneys, to talk about the Supreme Court's decision in Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission, a very important, critically important case. And indeed, having invited that attorney, an organization decided that they were going to make a stink on campus. Can you tell us what happened?
Sure. So we, like you said, the Yale Federalist Society invited this group to campus. The talk was scheduled for Tuesday. We announced it for Sunday. And I think within a few minutes of the announcement, emails started flooding in protesting the event. And about 20 student organizations signed on to a boycott. The initial leader of that boycott was a group called Outlaws, which is the campus LGBTQ group. And they called ADF a hate group, homophobic, transphobic, et cetera, parroted a lot of Southern Poverty Law Center talking points. Mm-hmm. And they called for the Federal Society to disinvite the speaker. They condemned it. And they also called on the law school administration to clarify its funding policies. And in addition, demanded that it no longer admit students who believe in the things that ADF does.
So this presented exactly the dilemma that you suspected it would present, which would be disinviting a speaker leads to then removing the opportunity for financial assistance for public fellowships, which could lead to, after all, accepting a position with employer that has to, for example, as was the next step here, a certification that's it's in compliance with Yale's non-discrimination policy. So this presents a little bit of a slippery slope, doesn't it?
Oh, I think very much so. And to begin with, we were surprised when the law school made this announcement. As you can imagine, a lot of student groups on Yale are very activist and they often present these lists of demands. But this was a situation that surprised us, that a month later, the law school administration had seemed to cave in to this demand. Our big question is, so you cave to their demand on funding, are you going to cave to their demand on admissions? And you're absolutely right. I see this as a slippery slope. It starts with it no longer provides stipends and loan forgiveness for students and graduates working for organizations with these policies. I think that very easily extends to we will no longer allow law firms to recruit on campus that do pro bono work with organizations like ADF. And that very easily translates to we will no longer admit students that have these beliefs. Because if you're starting with the premise that belief in Christianity and belief in natural marriage, the traditional Christian sexual ethic, if you're starting with the belief that that is bigoted, then it just follows that you wouldn't want a bigot in the law school.
So this had some positive ripple effects. Your piece in the Federalist and your recognition of the fact that this was an overtly discriminatory policy, one of which was Republican Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri, who sent a letter to AG Barr and Attorney Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, asking that their agencies work to cut off federal funding to Yale because it was discriminating against students joining Christian organizations. And Senator Ted Cruz of Texas accused the school of trying to blacklist certain organizations who are Christians, such as Alliance Defending Freedom, and actually announced a subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary Committee would be investigating the school's public policies on distributing grants. Are you pleased with these outcomes?
I am pleased. I am concerned, though, because I don't think that the issue is over. So where we're at right now is that the law school has said that they will include an exemption for religious organizations, which they had not announced from the very beginning. But after this became more public, they did announce that. But they haven't defined how they're going to say what a religious organization is. Is it going to be something that is closely tied to a specific ministry, or will it allow groups like ADF that support Christian values to also hire people who profess a Christian faith? I'm worried that Yale is going to hide behind that ambiguity. And they're going to claim that they have this religious exemption, but it's only going to be a very narrow one that still allows them to blacklist ADF. And Yale has still not told us how they're going to define a religious organization. They say they've appointed a committee to address the issue, to evaluate it, but we're still waiting on their answer.
Well, we do know that Tyson Langhofer, who's director of the ADF Center for Academic Freedom, a friend of ours here at FRC, has said it's pretty clear that he believes it's motivated by anti-religious bigotry. So, Aaron, we thank you for joining us today. Good luck in your final exams and ultimately on the bar exam. You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships. Coming up next, the Louisiana House is one step closer to a constitutional amendment indicating no right to abortion. I'll talk to the lead sponsor, Democratic Representative Katrina Jackson, next.
Jerry, what are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand-up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. As a reminder, check out our podcast at tonyperkins.com. You can follow Tony on Twitter at tperkins or me, if you'd like, at Sarah P. Perry. Well, Louisiana is now moving forward with a bill that would confirm there is no right to an abortion in the state constitution. And in fact, the House late yesterday passed HB 425, the Love Life Constitutional Amendment. I love that name. In a vote of 80-10, clearing the two-thirds margin needed to move on to the Senate. The bill would add language to the Louisiana Constitution saying that there is no constitutional right to an abortion or taxpayer funding for abortion. To be added now, the bill has to pass the state legislature by a two-thirds majority and then be approved by voters overall. So joining me now is the bill's primary sponsor, Democratic Louisiana State Representative Katrina Jackson. Representative Jackson, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you for having me. How's everyone doing?
We are doing well. And let me tell you, let me start this segment by saying, on behalf of the millions of pro-lifers listening to this broadcast, we take great care in extending our thanks to you for your comments at the March for Life and your sponsorship of this critically important bill. I can imagine, among other Democrats nationwide, that may not have been a very easy stance to take.
Well, I tell people it's just my reasonable service to the Lord. God has been so good to me. Even at the National March for Life, what I said was that the Bible says that 16 that God hates, number 7 is an abomination. One of those 6 is the shedding of innocent blood. So I don't see this as a Democrat or Republican issue. I don't see it as a black or white issue. I see it as an issue to stand on what God has said and to stand for children.
Amen. Did you introduce this bill as a direct result of what was going on in the state of New York when the entire avalanche of these incredibly aggressive pro-abortion bills were being enacted and discussed in state legislatures?
It was actually a response to a number of things that was happening in some of the state Supreme Court. The state Supreme Courts and other states have recognized the right to abortion in their constitution. Of course, we had the New York issue going on. We had a number of bills in different state legislatures which was dealing with whether or not there was a right to abortion or how long a person could go before they had an abortion. So basically, it was a variety of issues that came up. And so Louisiana being the number one pro-life state in the nation, we just knew it was time to make some clarification and also give our citizens the right to vote. So many times the legislators will vote on issues regarding abortion and whether you're pro-life or pro-choice, and we really never give our constituents a chance to vote on this. We believe that it was time in Louisiana that we stood not only as legislators but with our constituents.
So recent polls of Louisiana voters, and you just mentioned it is the most pro-life state in the country, found that 70% of Louisianans consider themselves to be pro-life. Now, as you look at this bill's next process, the next step on its journey to the Senate, are you hopeful about the fact that this will pass?
I've never been so presumptuous about passing a bill in my life. I don't see how it wouldn't. If you look at the trend of our votes in the Louisiana House and Senate, we've always voted, at least two-thirds of us have voted as pro-lifers. This bill requires a two-thirds vote and not a majority vote like regular bills because it's a constitutional amendment. So we're very hopeful and presumptuous that this will pass. And so at this point, we're just moving forward.
So we know that there obviously has been some blowback, and Stephanie Bangle of the New Orleans Abortion Fund has said people in Louisiana suffer when restrictions are passed. Women are suffering, and so too are children born into families that couldn't support them. What's your response to Ms. Bangle?
When they say children suffer from abortion, and some, look, the opposition say the opposite, that women suffer from not having abortion. This is my response to this. As a Black female Democrat, right, let's start there. More babies are killed in the womb, African-American babies, than by any other disease, illness, or situation. So I told people that I've seen, even in my community, the hurt that it causes, the decline in our population that it causes. And then when you go just to a broader wide span discussion of this issue, women are definitely hurt by abortion. We've had women to testify before our committee, right? And they talked about how they elected to have an abortion, but because the abortion physician did not have, you know, the proper credentials or made a mistake and was not credentialed at a hospital, that they can no longer have children. And they didn't think that one life choice would control the remainder of their life on such an important issue. So I've seen women hurt every day.
Can you give us a number before we close out this segment that people can call if they want to support this bill?
Sure. You can call 225-342-6945. And that's the general number to the House. And you can ask for any member of the House. And the number for the Senate is 225-342-2040. I know you asked for that number, but I want to also give an email for it as well, jacksonk@legis.la.gov.
My guest has been State Representative Katrina Jackson of the Louisiana Legislature. Thank you so much, Representative Jackson, for coming on air today. God bless you and your good work. This is Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships, sitting in for Tony. Coming up next, Bernie Sanders has made a second presidential run, and his first initiative is Medicaid for All. Sounds like a great idea, but is it? We'll discuss next with Sally Pipes.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachman. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away. Get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, filling in for Tony Perkins today. As a reminder, visit our podcast, tonyperkins.com. Follow Tony on Twitter at tperkins and me at Sarah P. Perry. For more information about the guests you'll hear today and to share the podcast with other listeners. Well, election talk is already upon us. It seems like we just left election season, but indeed it is ramping up again. Making a second bid for the White House is Democratic Senator from Vermont, Bernie Sanders, who has made his campaign promise, Medicare for All. Recently, he was at a Fox News town hall, spoke very passionately about Medicare for All, and he had to say this.
First of all, let's be clear what we mean by Medicare for All. Medicare is a government-run program for seniors, which is widely popular and quite effective. In 1965, when Lyndon Johnson passed that bill, it was called by some Republicans socialism and everything else. But you go to the average senior and you say, how do you feel about Medicare? And they will tell you that they will oppose any Republican effort to cut Medicare. We are not talking about government-run health care. The Veterans Administration, and most veterans think that that's a pretty good health care system, talk to the American Legion and the VFW. They strongly defend the veterans' health care. That's government-run. What we are talking about is simply a single-payer insurance program, which means that you will have a card which has Medicare on it. You'll go to any doctor that you want. You'll go to any hospital that you want. And by the way, millions of people today are in networks which prevent them from doing this. So this gives you freedom of choice with regard to the doctors you go to or the hospitals you go to. But here is the main point when we talk about health care. Currently, right now, we've got 30 million people, zero health insurance, and many of you and tens of millions of Americans are underinsured with high deductibles and copayments. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. So what happens is there are estimates that some 30,000 Americans die every single year because they don't go to the doctor when they should. People have different views of capitalism or democratic socialism, whatever it may be. But this is my view. I believe that human beings, especially in a wealthy, democratic, civilized society like our own, are entitled to certain basic rights. I believe that healthcare is a human right, not a privilege. Okay? And I believe that there is something embarrassingly wrong when the United States of America is the only major country on earth not to guarantee health care to all people.
A lot of passion, a lot of promises, and a lot of rhetoric. It sounds great in theory, but is it? Perhaps there is no one better suited to discuss this topic than my next guest. Sally Pipes is a contributor to the Washington Examiner. She is president and senior fellow in healthcare policy at the Pacific Research Institute, and she is the author of The False Promise of a Single-Payer Healthcare. Sally, welcome so much to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's a really hot topic. I don't
know
if we can survive until after November 2020.
Well, I tell you what, I'm excited to delve into it with you because once again, the notion of universal health care has entered the public discourse. And there is no one who has championed this more unflaggingly than Senator Sanders. Now, I do want to immediately clarify something for our listeners, because when Sanders says a single payer system is not government run health care, do you think he's accurate?
Oh, absolutely not. He's talking about, as he did in 2016 when he was running against Hillary for the Democratic nomination, and the Urban Institute costed that plan out at $30 trillion over 10 years, the same thing in his 2017 single-payer plan, and now in his April 10th Senate Bill 1129, which is single-payer, and it's right in there. Single-payer means the only payer for health care is the government. And, you know, there are only three countries in the world that have a true single-payer system: Canada, Cuba, and North Korea. And it means that no private coverage is allowed. And Senator Sanders has said that. So has a senator from California, Kamala Harris. They want to get rid of all private insurance and put everyone into a government plan.
Now, I detect, as I'm sure our listeners do, a hint of a Canadian accent. So when I said there was no one better suited to discuss this, not only are you incredibly credentialed in the study of this kind of healthcare policy, but you yourself are from Canada. So can you tell us, when Senator Sanders holds up Canada as the penultimate example of socialized medicine that works, what is your response to that?
Well, you know, I mean, it was unfortunate on that Fox show when you aired the play of it that, there wasn't somebody on, say, my side that would come up and say, what you're talking about, this is what the Canadian healthcare system is all about. Long waits for care. In 2018, the average wait from seeing a primary care doctor to getting treatment by a specialist was almost 5 months, 19.8 weeks. And it is not free. Canadians pay, on average, a family of four pays $13,000 a year in hidden taxes for a healthcare system that puts them on a list. And the people that are the worst off tend to be the seniors, because seniors have their care rationed because of these long waits. In many cases, in the case of my own mother, who died of colon cancer a few years ago, was a senior. When she thought she had colon cancer, she couldn't get a colonoscopy because she was told she was too old. Finally, in the fall, when she was hemorrhaging, she went to Vancouver General Hospital in an ambulance, 2 days in the emergency room, 2 days in the transit lounge, waiting for a bed and a ward. She got a colonoscopy, but she died 2 weeks later from metastasized colon cancer. You have long wait, you have rationed care, high taxes, and doctor shortages. So these are the things that are prevalent in the Canadian healthcare system. You can't, Bernie Sanders says under his plan, there will be no referrals. You'll just call up, your neurosurgeon or your cardiologist. Well, it just can't work that way, because the demand for healthcare will be so much greater than the supply that government is able to provide that care is rationed. And that's why in Canada today, about 200,000 Canadians out of a population of only 37 million, fewer than in the state of California, go abroad to get care when they think, and pay out of pocket when they think, the wait for an MRI if they think they have a brain tumor is too long. People need to know that you won't just be able to call up your specialist. MRI, the average wait for MRIs is several months. I mean, Canada, I just feel so passionate that the American people need to know, what a single-payer system would mean when the government runs the healthcare system. And look at when he talks about Medicare, everyone loves Medicare. Well, in fact, the Medicare trustees just came out last week and said that Medicare Part A, the hospital part of Medicare, will be bankrupt by 2026. How can we add in, have $330 million less, $55 million who are already on Medicare, into a Medicare system that's going bankrupt right now. And all, as I say, all private doctors will quit medicine early. We've already seen the stats. About 122 million will quit by 2030 because they will be paid Medicare rates 40% below what docs are paid today for treating private patients.
So help us distinguish. This was originally a bill that was introduced in 2017. So this is Bernie Sanders' second iteration of a universalized health care plan, and he has titled it Medicare for All. And again, as you mentioned, Medicare for All sounds in theory like a great idea. Everyone likes the notion of Medicare, but what are the distinctions between his 2017 proposal and what he is proposing now?
Well, as I think people should realize, Bernie Sanders never talks about how much his plan will cost and how it will be paid for. And as I mentioned, Urban Institute planned out his plan when he was running against Hillary at $30 trillion over 10 years. Charles Blayhouse from the Mercatus Center costed out the 2017 plan at $32 trillion over 10 years. This new plan, I think he was trying to compete with Pramila Jayapal, the House member from Washington State, who has her single-payer bill, which would be implemented within 2 years and have free long-term care. So Bernie's plan is now adding in free long-term care so people can get free home care and free care in community clinics. His plan would be introduced over implemented over 4 years. But this will not cost $32 trillion over 10 years. It's going to cost a lot more. He talked about Lyndon Johnson in 1965. Well, you know, when Medicare came into being in 1965, it cost $3 billion in the first year, and they projected it would cost $12 billion by 1990. In fact, it cost $110 billion. So these numbers that are out there right now, I think, are even low in terms of what will happen when people think something is free. The demand will be much greater. And, you know, it's just we'd have to see huge tax increases to pay for this. Bernie talked about a new 77% estate tax, top marginal income tax rates of up to 70%, a new tax on large financial institutions. But as Blayhouse said, doubling all of the income taxes and all of the corporate income taxes would not be enough to pay for this takeover of our healthcare system. But the worst is that people will be denied care and they will not like it. And when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez comes out and says, well, she's a single-payer fan, she loves the VA, VA for all. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Has she not read any of the articles that are in the mainstream media every day about how our vets are denied care, how they're on long waiting lists, how there is fraud? These are the things that would happen to us as Americans if the government fully took over our health care.
I think reading through some of your research, and you just mentioned one of these statistics, doubling federal, individual, and corporate tax would be insufficient to cover the cost of this individual program, which really begs the question. We understand that there are a number of uninsured. Bernie Sanders referenced the 30 million odd Americans who are uninsured or underinsured in the United States, and yet doubling income tax, doubling federal tax for corporations and private individuals leads us with more debt in order to provide a health care service that will be substandard to what we have now. So you've written two excellent books on the notion of socialized medicine. The first was specifically related to Obamacare, and this most recent book is The False Promise of Single-Payer Health Care. How do we address a problem of this magnitude, understanding that it is a constant talking point in the political rhetoric that we are hearing, and with the influx of individuals who consider themselves to be democratic socialists? And that's really a lot of word salad for someone who is plain and simple a socialist. How do we address a situation of this magnitude going forward, understanding that these programs are so fraught with difficulty?
Well, I mean, we now have on the Democratic side 19 candidates who are vying to get the nomination, the Democratic nomination for president. Some of them, such as Bernie Sanders, Senator Kamala Harris, Kirsten Gillibrand, Cory Booker, and Elizabeth Warren have all endorsed Sanders' new plans. Some of these people who are in the race are saying, well, we're going to have sort of Medicare buy-in at 50. We're going to have Medicare for America. All of these things, which are stepping stones to single payer. So we have to, what you do, what I do, what so many of the people in the free market movement are doing, we have to educate Americans and tell them in plain and simple language that their care will be rationed, they will have long waits, they will have much higher taxes, and they won't have access to the kind of care, the greatest equipment. It's all here in America, the best medicines, all of this. We have to explain that this can't happen when the government is fully in charge. And when you think, people have to think, what do they think about the Department of Motor Vehicles? Is it efficiently run?
Perfect example.
The post office is more efficient today because it has competition from FedEx and DHL and UPS. But I tend to use those if I want to make sure something is going to get there on time and actually get there. But, you know, if we have, 28 million people who are uninsured, a lot of those people are young people who paid the individual mandate when it was still there because the cost of coverage under Obamacare was too high. But we need to give people options. Universal coverage can be reached if we have universal choice. Like the Democrats, you know, have been talking about the short-term limited duration plan, saying they're junk insurance, they're sabotaging the healthcare sector. But in fact, a lot of young people would like to buy a stripped down plan that doesn't have 10 essential health care benefits that they could have for 12 months, renewable for 3 years. Not everybody, you know, wants a plan that covers every single mandate that's under Obamacare or that states put on their insurers. The same with association health plans. Let's let sole proprietors and small businesses group together so there are larger groups so that they can get better insurance. A lot of people, you know, President Obama had two goals, reducing the cost curve and eliminating the number of uninsured. He didn't achieve either of those goals under Obamacare. And we turned the health insurance, the health sector upside down for adding between 10 to 12 million people. It would have been better for the government to purchase, you know, private coverage for every one of them. It would have been a lot cheaper.
So Bernie Sanders has promised that he would, quote, ram Medicare for all through Congress of elected president in 2020. How certain are you that he would actually take that tact, knowing what you know about his proposal?
Well, if you think back, you know, in his own state of Vermont, they passed a single-payer health care bill back in 2011 with a Democratic governor. In 2014, Governor Shumlin had to withdraw that single-payer health care plan because he said that the state of Vermont, Vermonters could not afford it and the taxes would just be too high. So I am sure Bernie Sanders has a view for America. As he says, health care is a right. He wants government to be in charge of everything, whether it's our college education, our health care, all of these things. I personally think when the American people understand what single-payer health care means for them, if he did become the candidate, I very much doubt that he would win because this is not possible.
Sally Pipes, I wish we had more time. She is president, CEO, and fellow in healthcare policy at the Pacific Research Institute and author of the new book, The False Promise of Single-Payer Healthcare. This has been Washington Watch. I've had the privilege of being your host, Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. We encourage you to visit our podcast, TonyPerkins.com. Visit us on Twitter at T Perkins and at Sarah P. Perry, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.